So soon we go behind door number two to find out who is our secret guest, and we will do that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me go back there now and open up door number two. Who might this be? Hello?
Well, my clue is, George, I grew up in Motown, but now I live in Guitar Town, Twang Town, or what I call Stargate Nashville.
I know this voice. None other than, drum roll please, William Henry.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Wonderful, George. How are you?
I'm doing great. You are going to be very busy. When? This coming weekend.
That's right. Dreamland Festival in Nashville. We've got Whitley Strieber, Jim Mars, Linda Moulton Howe, Ann Strieber, Marla Fries all rolling into here to Music City for just a wonderful weekend with the fans of Dreamland, and looking forward to it.
Super. What have you been doing lately, William?
I've been all over the place, actually, George. I've been in, gosh, I feel like that hotel commercial. Been in Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Dallas, twice. Doing a lot of speaking and actually finishing my new book, which is called Freedom's Gate, about the United States Capitol. So I've spent a lot of time in D.C. the past 6 months.
You see a lot of symbolism at the Capitol, don't you?
Oh, it's tremendous. It's so inspiring to view the Capitol after spending so much time in Egypt, for example, and coming back and looking and saying, well, wait a minute. What is going on in this capital? The capital is Thomas Jefferson called it, is known as the Temple of Sovereignty. The founding fathers called it the Temple of Liberty. And for some reason, we've gotten away from this idea that, or this understanding that the capital is not only a temple, but it's also the physical counterpart to the Constitution. And I'm on, if I can call it, a crusade right now to kind of open people up or awaken them to the powerful symbolism that's in the Capitol, because right now we're on the verge of losing so much of what is really America at the core, and it begins with an understanding of what's inside the dome of the U.S. Capitol. Unfortunately, as I'm out talking, George, I'm surprised. I'll put up a photo of the U.S. Capitol. Most people can identify it. Then I'll ask the question, even among those who work in D.C., what is inside the dome of the U.S. Capitol? And I'm saddened to report that most people don't know what is inside the dome of the United States Capitol.
And the Capitol itself was physically constructed, when was it?
You have the laying of the cornerstone ceremony in 1793, September 1793. General George Washington in full Masonic regalia laid the cornerstone of the Capitol, and it's been continually evolving ever since then. It was burned during the War of 1812 by the British. It was rebuilt, and now with the Capitol Visitor Center expansion that just opened last December, we now have the Capitol in its present state fully manifested as a temple and awaiting the people to come visit this temple and get involved with what is going there.
You know, William, it was Thomas Jefferson who created a design competition for the Capitol, and the prize was a whopping, at that time, $500. I wonder what that would be worth today.
Right, exactly. Well, it's priceless, actually. I mean, because that design contest, it was an open contest. There were 17 designs, and then all of a sudden we get this wonderful design by William Thornton. And again, it was viewed by Jefferson and Washington together that they wanted this temple, this house of the people. In fact, when they opened the Capitol Visitor Center, House Majority Leader Harry Reid said that we welcome you to the house of the temple of the people, the house of the people. And a lot of the conservative commentators got upset about the reference to the Capitol as a temple and America's sole oracle as the Constitution. But this is the way the founding fathers thought. And so that actually inspired me to start looking inside the Capitol, and what I found was absolutely remarkable in terms of this true spiritual nature. In fact, the enlightened nature of the artwork in the Capitol. When you look up in the rotunda and you see an apotheosized or deified George Washington sitting on a rainbow in a heavenly scene, it's truly awe-inspiring. But then when you start to connect that imagery with what it was intended to be connected with, for example, the Last Judgment scenes of Jesus on the rainbow and the Tibetan Great Perfection images of their enlightened ones, you really start to get this idea, it's hammered in, that true freedom and true liberty is about awakened consciousness and, in fact, enlightenment. And today, unfortunately, we've gotten away from this idea, this true understanding of what true liberty and true freedom is, and we've got to get back to it.
These symbols, when they were painted throughout the dome and every place else in the Capitol, do you think it was the work of just the artist who did that and he ran wild with it and he said, well, nobody's going to figure this out? Or do you think there was a plan to do that?
Well, a little bit of both. The painter's name was Constantino Brumidi. He was a former Vatican painter. He was one of the greatest painters in Rome. And he surely recognized when he arrived in Washington in 1852 that the dome of the United States Capitol and the dome of the Vatican are mirror images of one another. In fact, the U.S. Capitol, the Vatican, and Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem, as it was conceived by the Masons with a dome, all three triangulate. And so when he comes into that dome, he is told by Montgomery Miggs, who's the head of the Corps of Engineers and in charge of constructing that dome, that they want the U.S. Capitol to look like the Vatican. And that's why when you're in the Brumidi corridors, the corridors where the senators have all their offices and meeting rooms, or rather their meeting rooms, their offices are in the office buildings nearby, the artwork in those corridors is identical, virtually identical, indistinguishable from that of what Raphael did in the Vatican during the Renaissance.
Amazing. Go ahead.
And so when Miggs has hired Brumidi to do this artwork, he tells him, make it look like the Vatican. He's inspired by Pompeii and Herculaneum, but then he's given free rein. And what Brumidi does is astonishing, George, because not only does he portray Washington as a deified being on the rainbow who is, in fact, calling all of us to our higher selves and calling us into the heavenly realms, but he also paints five pagan gods that the church had spent over 1,600 years trying to get rid of. So Brumidi resurrects these gods and puts them up on the dome of the Capitol. And lo and behold, those gods are all the five symbols of the elements of alchemy. The message here that Brumidi has left for us and that I talk about in the book is that the way to transform, the way to achieve true freedom and true liberty is to learn about how to transform ourselves into awakened or enlightened beings.
Interesting. Are you planning any Stargate tours?
Yeah, I've got Stargate Egypt coming up in January. That's the next really big one. And in between, I'm going to be planning another trip back into our nation's capital this fall, hopefully.
Now, on the Egypt trip, are you going to be with Zahi Hawass at all?
Well, I haven't actually met Dr. Hawass. My tour partner, Mary Lamondo, is a very good friend of his, and he opens doors for us all over the country. She can pick up the phone and call him and ask special permission to visit sites that are normally off limits to ordinary tourists. But I haven't met him personally in Egypt. I've had a chance to meet him informally in Sedona a couple of years ago, but never in Egypt.
You know, we've been thinking about doing some shows there near the pyramids. We just haven't been able to hone in on a date yet.
Wow.
This could be interesting.
Yeah, well,
we've got some leeway with you this time.
Absolutely, would love to do anything like that with you, George. It's going to Egypt is the trip of a lifetime. It is truly awe-inspiring and truly life-changing.
Well, you know, Egyptians love Americans by and large. I'm not talking about the wackos that are all over this planet, mm-hmm. but you know, citizens of Egypt, they love America.
Oh, absolutely. They just don't. They in certain times haven't liked our government. Now they love Obama. When I was there in January, everywhere I went, it was Obama, Obama, Obama. And so there's definitely a change in tone that I noticed on this past trip. But in general, even in previous administrations, they love America, and that is truly inspiring. And when you get to Egypt and you start talking with Egyptians, they want to know, what's America like? And they all have friends that have come to America, and they ultimately respect America because of what it stands for.
What was it like seeing the pyramids for the very first time?
It's like waking up from a dream. This life is a dream. And then when you go to Egypt and see the pyramids, now you're awake. Now you're dealing with something that has been there for millennia and will be there for millennia, for thousands of years. And it, takes us just a little bit of time to make that adjustment every time you see the pyramids, because part of you still can't believe that they even exist and how huge they are, and just, you know, what a piece of history you're actually looking at.
Did it take your breath away?
Totally, totally. And then to go inside the pyramid and to have experiences inside the pyramid, now, I mean, that just takes it into a whole nother realm.
You did that. That's got to be awe-inspiring, too.
Oh, truly. I mean, I've been in there a number of times, and every time I go in there, you just, you're just, one, you're confronted by the challenge still of the left brain of wanting to figure out who built this building.
And how.
And what's its purpose. And then once you let all that go, then you just kind of let the temple itself take care of you.
Do you think you could ever get lost inside of there? Or is it pretty lit up now?
Oh, no. There are definitely some, all of the corridors that you can enter into, the Queen's Chamber, the King's Chamber, and the pit down below are well-marked, well-lit. You can't get lost in those. But when you're in there, you sure do dream about, wow, what's behind that grate over there? They've got those metal bars that lead off into another passage. I wonder what's down there. And you can just see yourself absolutely getting lost in those passages.
Absolutely. My gosh. Okay, from Egypt, then, you go into other areas. Let's talk a little bit about the old stargates, too, William, and your explanation for them, because that's fascinating. What do you think they are, stargates?
Well, I interpret a stargate on three levels. One, it's a communications link between stars, from the heart of one sun to the heart of another sun. And that brings up what I call stargate metaphysics. This is the idea that everything in our universe is interconnected. And with this stargate metaphysics or stargate consciousness, you can conceivably imagine portals or wormholes, stargates that link all of the stars and all of the star systems. Secondly, a stargate is a place on Earth that I view as a shamanic trance portal, a place where energy pulsing or, in fact, ringing from our star or perhaps from other stars or star systems is easily received. Think of the Great Pyramid. That is a stargate. Robert Bovall is one who's noted it as a transfiguration machine. It is a place where stellar energies are received from Sirius, from Orion, and also where individuals, according to Bovall and others, can be literally teleported or transported to other star systems. So often you'll find these stargates, they're marked by mounds, which are symbolic of the primordial mound of the first creation. They're also marked by domes, and this is why the dome of the U.S. Capitol becomes so important, and why it then becomes important that George Washington is portrayed in a circle of 72 stars in that dome. It is figuratively, metaphorically, and perhaps even literally a stargate. That dome is designed as a solar temple, Solomon's temple. Solomon's name is Sol-Om-An, the three names for the sun. And that all these solar temples that are modeled after Solomon's temple, including the Vatican, including the U.S. Capitol, are solar temples, star temples, or places that are utilized to collect the energy of our sun. This is why the Vatican, Solomon's Temple, and the U.S. Capitol are power places. The energy there is palpable. It's designed to be that way because its designers knew how to take advantage of these stellar energies.
Can you stumble into these stargates?
Yes, you can. And then that brings up to the third definition of the stargate, which is it's a transportation device that moves people or objects across galactic space from locations on Earth. And yes, you can. People, and this has been my stock in trade as a mythologist, is seeking out all of these various stargate stories going back to the very beginning with the story of the Epic of Gilgamesh and his quest for immortality and his quest for the gates of the gods. The gate of the Garden of Eden that was closed after Adam and Eve were evicted from the garden, the Tower of Babel, which originally was a ladder or gate to heaven, the fiery furnace of Babylon, another stargate, Jesus's ascension and resurrection stories, in which in Christian art he's always portrayed with an open gateway behind him. I interpret that as a stargate. That's just a handful of stories right there that all tell us that throughout human history, what has motivated spiritual seekers is the idea, the notion that there are gates that connect our planet with other star systems.
You have interesting insight into world events, William, because, you know, you've studied them, you've traveled. This entire economic mess that we still seem to be in, done by design by those who want this one world order, what do you think?
I think so. I mean, I remember George talking back in 1996, and at UFO conferences and elsewhere, and I would always cite the UN number that said one half of the world's population, to call that what 3 billion people, do not have access to a toilet, and are 2.5 days walk from the nearest telephone. While we here in the West have every possible convenience we could imagine, we live like kings. And in the to the half of the civilization that does not have a toilet or a telephone, there's no difference between our lifestyle and that of, say, Bill Gates, because we're just clearly on different planets. And the question that I would ask then is, how can we possibly continue with this imbalance in our world? There's going to have to be a reckoning. There's going to have to be a balancing act that unfolds. And I think that that's what's ultimately behind this, because now you've got the Chinese, you've got people in India and elsewhere that are aspiring towards the American lifestyle with not only a toilet and a telephone, but a new car and a refrigerator and microwave computers and everything else. And I think that that's what we're seeing behind this. And then, unfortunately, what seems to be part of that plan is the destruction of America as we know it. And personally, I'm deeply, deeply concerned about that, because America is the only, as far as I'm concerned, culture that is dedicated to true freedom and ultimately true enlightenment. And when you read statements by, for example, Senator Dick Durbin back in April said just flat out that our Temple of Liberty has been sold. He proclaimed that the banks own the place.
And now we're going to give the Federal Reserve more powers.
And now we're giving the Federal Reserve more powers. George, what they're leading us to here is, in the words of King Solomon, slavery. This is spiritual slavery. King Solomon wrote that the rich rule over the poor, the borrower is servant to the lender. And if the government is the lender, we are then the servants of this entity. But if the government is then giving over this power to some nebulous entity called the Federal Reserve that nobody knows anything about, they're literally handing us over on a silver platter to some people who might not have our best intentions at heart.
That's true. Can we fight back?
We fight back by taking care of business ourselves, by taking personal responsibility for ourselves, getting out of debt as quickly as possible, staying debt-free, and then also I recommend going to our Temple of Liberty and meeting these money changers. And if you like what they are doing, tell them. If you don't like what they're doing, well, there's always the path taken by Jesus. Throw them out. Throw these money changers out of our temple. And that's what has to happen right now.
The Dreamland Festival in Nashville that William will be at, he'll also be joined with Jim Mars, Linda Moulton Howe, who is our guest on Thursday. And, of course, it's put on by Whitley Strieber and Ann Strieber as well. If you want information, you can get it at unknowncountry.com and williamhenry.net. You've got a great website.
Thank you very much. I truly appreciate that. My webmaster, Mark Foster, he lives in London. I've enjoyed his work over the years and finally got smart and decided to hire him.
And the graphics are good. Does he do all that, too? You still have Dana doing some pictures?
No, I'm not working with Dana any longer. Mark has kind of taken over all that for continuity's sake, and I really enjoy what Mark's been doing with the site.
Great. Well, William, stay with us. We're going to take questions with you next when we come back. Stargates, symbolism, you name it, William Henry will answer it when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. We're with investigative mythologist William Henry. He was behind secret door number 2. Next hour, we go to door number 3. But when we come right back, let's take your phone calls with William on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We've got the mythologist William Henry with us, and we're going to take your phone calls. My staff wants this Egypt thing to happen, William.
All right.
So we got to figure this one out, huh?
Let's do it. That's the best news I've heard in a while.
And, you know, we know Zahi as well, and I think he'd be gracious to do this. Problem is, you know, I can't bring up the subject of ETs building the pyramids. He'll go ballistic. He'll throw me out of Egypt, for crying out loud.
He'll throw you in the bottom of the pyramid, George, and throw away the key.
At the same time, I have to bring it up somehow, so we got to figure this out.
Yeah, well, we'll come up with some great questions for you.
Maybe you can bring it up, and then he'll throw you out.
I'll be happy to play the foil. That would be my pleasure.
Let's go to Jacksonville, Florida, east of the Rockies. Linda, you're on with William. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering about two things. One, do you think once the third temple is built, if that might activate a stargate? And also, the way that the Capitol and the Vatican and Solomon's Temple, you know, where it should be, is lined up. If you did a trajectory upward, if that would be facing any particular star, like the way the pyramids on the Giza Plateau are lined up with Orion's Belt.
Yeah, that's a couple of really important questions, because when you look at the statements of the builders of the U.S. Capitol, they explicitly referred to it as a rebuilding of Solomon's Temple. Now, of course, that's a biblical prophecy scenario. Everybody's wondering, when is the third Temple of Solomon going to be built in Jerusalem? And what this is saying, what the founding fathers of this country are saying is that they've already handled that for us. The new Temple of Solomon is in Washington, D.C. And what is very powerful about this is that there is not a particular stellar alignment with the U.S. Capitol. However, there is a very important stellar message inside the dome of the Capitol. When Washington is shown enthroned on that rainbow, he is surrounded by 13 star beings. Now, this is important because the Tibetans teach us that when you see an enlightened being on a rainbow or in a rainbow, he is part of a teaching they call the Great Perfection. And the Tibetans teach that this Great Perfection or enlightenment teaching did not come from Earth. They teach that it's taught in 13 star systems in addition to our own. Well, when you look at Washington on the rainbow, he's clearly portrayed as one of these Tibetan perfected ones, and there are 13 star maidens that surround him. And the way that I read this is that what that's saying is that Earth is part of a federation, if you will, of star systems where this Great Perfection teaching is taught. And when you look at the banner held by these star beings, it says, E pluribus unum, out of many, one. And if you asked my opinion about what the name of that federation is, I would say that it's E pluribus unum.
What got you interested in all this, William, a long time ago?
Well, I actually started with the book Holy Blood, Holy Grail when I was in college in 1982, and just kept pulling on the golden thread, if you will. I got hooked on this idea of this mystery tradition, this mystery teaching that has been suppressed throughout the ages, and just have a deep personal connection with it and a desire to solve it.
People swarm around you at conferences when I'm there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I truly, that's one of the great benefits of writing books, in my opinion. I learned early on that writing a book was simply a ticket that gets you on the road to meeting wonderful new people and friends.
Let's go to Paducah, Kentucky. Hello, John. You're up with us.
Hey, guys. Great to talk to you this evening.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to say I work in the criminal justice field. My father is a 33rd degree Mason.
Okay.
I'm the firstborn male son, and he's tried to get me involved in the Masons, and I'm kind of opposed to that, working in the criminal justice field, because I took an oath to defend the people here. I work in corrections now. I'm a former police officer. But my question is, we have all this hidden symbolism within the dollar bill, the all-seeing eye, Moloch, Moloch, the stone owl. I'm going to ask William, does he think that that is implanted in, so when the New World Order does take over, we just adapt to it because it's so subliminal that we're just going to snap in and fall in line?
Good
it's
question.
All around us, everywhere.
How subliminal is this, William?
Well, it's not subliminal. In fact,
it's pretty direct, then, huh?
It's pretty direct, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the dollar bill, I think of that as the the single greatest work of occult literature in all of human history. It's been printed more than any other book of occult symbolism anywhere. And if you can decode the symbols on the dollar bill, the idea is not that you're going to be controlled by an organization, but rather, if you master it, you become free of any organization that could potentially control you or manipulate you.
Now, he doesn't want to join the Masons. 99% of the Masons I know are out there working their tails off for fundraising efforts and stuff to help kids and everything else. They're all great, dedicated people. What are we talking about? An upper echelon, a top tier of Masons who are into all this other stuff?
Perhaps. I mean, I personally have never met any of these top tier Masons, so I don't know. I mean, I personally have no fear of the Masons. I'm in Masonic temples frequently. There's a magnificent Masonic temple in Philadelphia that's the oldest lodge in the United States. And it's, you go in there, you take a tour. The Masons are extremely friendly. The symbolism is open. And if you want to join, though, you can. They don't pressure you. And then when you go into, for example, the Scottish Rite Temple in D.C., you see that there's literally a who's who of American of America that are involved with the Scottish Rite Temple. Everybody from Burl Ives to Neil Armstrong to various presidents. And so you just, you have to just kind of find your own comfort level with it, really. I mean, first of all, my Indian name is Skipping Rock. I view myself as the rock going across the pond. The object is to get across to the other side without sinking. And that's how I view many of these traditions, be it the Masons or even other religious traditions. The idea is to experience them, to take what you can out of them that will help you on your quest. And if you enter some of these places in fear, you're going to get fear out. I literally have been in these places with people that have run screaming for the door because they let fear and paranoia take over.
Yeah, some people believe the Masons are Luciferians.
Right. I know the statements. Albert Pike certainly has said that. But personally, I don't see any reason to fear these organizations. I mean, they've done a tremendous amount of research, and their libraries are absolutely phenomenal. And so my point is that they can be a very excellent resource for your personal research quest if you allow it to be so. But then again, if you want to shy away from it, that's okay too. Just find your own path.
Okay, let's go next to Alexandria, Louisiana. Cornelius, it's your turn. Hi, Cornelius.
Hi, George and Henry. God bless both y'all and your call screener, Mr. Tommy.
Sure thing.
My question is, like these microchips they plan on installing in people, how soon do you think they'll be with that? And I'll take my answer off the air.
I used to think that we were less than 3 years away from that, and then somebody wrote me to notify me that there's far more powerful mind control techniques than chip technology. So it could be that they're already utilizing that technology on us.
William, if you had the ability to go any place on this planet right now, where would you go to study?
I'd like to go to Iraq. Iraq before we went into Iraq. I think there's still just tremendous knowledge that's still beneath the sands of Iraq. I mean, I've said it before that 20 feet beneath the sands of Iraq are all the secrets of the Anunnaki. And that is still, to me, ground zero in this search. We want to find out, who were the Anunnaki? Where did they come from? What did they do with us? And what did they leave for us in terms of helping us on our path?
Okay, who's next? Sacramento we go. Jonah, you're up. Hey, Jonah.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
We're well, thanks.
Good. I had kind of like a two-part question. My question was for the guest tonight, wonderful guest, George. And I was wondering if you were aware of the, I think in the 30s, Smithsonian had found some artifacts in our Grand Canyon in what appeared to be some sort of a temple.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you were obviously aware of that, if you thought maybe they were probably, and still are to this day, trying to cover up a Stargate of some kind?
Excellent question. Yeah, at the turn of the 20th century, artifacts were discovered of Egyptian and Buddhist nature in the Grand Canyon. The story is told that those artifacts are then carted up, taken back to Washington, floated out into the Atlantic and sunk. I don't know whether I believe that or not.
The Phoenix Gazette at the time wrote an article in 1909 talking about a remarkable find indicating ancient people migrated from the Orient and also possibly Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting stuff.
Yeah, and this is why you've got the Hindu place names in the Grand Canyon. As to the Stargate question, I think that's a good possibility, right? Because I certainly subscribe to this idea that there are locations around the planet that have been known for millennia that are both refuges from apocalypses and also places of interconnection to the stars. And I am personally convinced that the United States government has been long involved in the search for these gateways and is certainly in the business of controlling them.
Are you a believer in underground caverns that may be inhabited?
I love those stories, the whole Agartha stories, mm-hmm. all of that. I live here in Nashville. I've been up to nearby to Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. That's a location that Jules Verne mentioned as a possible inner Earth location. I'm fascinated by that. I would not be at all surprised if my ultimate quest led to such a place.
Well, let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. We're getting close to you, William. Charlotte, you're up. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, George. Hi, William. Hello. Hey, William. I've got about 3 of your books, and I was originally going to come see you guys at the Dreamland Festival this weekend, but something came up where I can't go. But I noticed a few days ago on the internet site when I was looking up the Bay Area UFO Conference, your name is listed there as a speaker in September. Are you still planning to go?
Absolutely. I'm looking very much forward to that. Thank you for mentioning that.
Okay, good, because I may see you there then instead.
She's got Eric Von Daniken on the list. It's, of course, J.J. Hertog, and I noticed George will be there as well.
Yep, I'm going to come out there. Vicky is a remarkable woman. You know, she was fighting for her life with her liver ailment. We did a little prayer session, William, and again, things seem to happen miraculously. She's doing fine.
Oh, I wish her all the best.
She is a fighter. She is indeed a fighter. Let's go next to California, wildcard line. Hello, Ronnie. It's your turn.
Hello. Yes, George.
Sure thing.
I got on pretty easily tonight. It was amazing. But anyway, I was looking at the back of the $1 bill, and they got 13 pentagrams in the configuration of the Star of David above the eagle, American eagle. You know, it's at the that's the backside of the presidential seal. If that's anything to do with our relationship to Israel, and that we are subservient to whatever they want to do, you know.
Okay, I would ask you to consider a different take on that, because that six-pointed star is called the star hexagram.
Right.
It's one of the oldest human symbols. In fact, it goes all the way back to beehive geometry is where it actually originates. And the whole idea is that you can awaken your consciousness and transcend the earthly plane. That is the ultimate meeting. It's the marriage of heaven and earth. The intertwining triangles are also the marriage or the unity of male and female. And so, again, just for your personal growth to consider, it's like, okay, if we get away from they're trying to control me, and I'm more into how can I awaken myself and educate and enlighten myself, then a completely different story begins to unfold. And of course, we all know that symbol was designed or commissioned on July 4th, 1776, under the watchful eye of Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. All three of those men were key advocates of self-reliance and self-initiation education. And they intended all of the American symbolisms to feed into this idea that if we put out these symbols, that individuals be able to educate themselves, to click on those symbols like we click on the icon on your computer screen today, and open up the amazing world of wisdom that is contained within those symbols. So I would just encourage you to maybe look at it from that perspective.
William, do you think we'll ever find the Ark of the Covenant?
I hope so. But personally, I believe that the Ark of the Covenant is inside our body. Whenever they're describing that temple, they're always asking you to put all of the accoutrements and implements in the temple, the tools, including the Ark of the Covenant, to put them inside the body. And when you look at it from that perspective, the Ark of the Covenant is our third chakra, our solar plexus chakra. It is our power center in our body. It is also a communications link in our body as well. And so I think that what happened is that they recognized that the human body is considered a perfect form, and then these technologies started falling out of human consciousness, including the Ark of the Covenant, and there may well be a golden box that is stashed away somewhere. There's probably, in fact, several copies of it, if you want my honest opinion.
Let's go to Albert, driving around in Seattle. Hey, Albert, go ahead.
Hey, George, thank you. Keep me awake many nights.
Super.
Just a quick comment. I heard you guys talking about the Masons and stuff, and I just wanted to dispel the myth that anybody who thinks Masons are devil worshipers, that they need to think back to the Shriners and all the work they do for kids, and you need to be a Mason to be a Shriner.
That's true.
I just wanted to dispel that myth to everybody out there listening.
They raise millions for
yes,
children.
Yes, they do.
Well, and I can tell you, I think this is going to all get heated up here in September when Dan Brown's new book, The Lost Symbol, comes out. It's supposed to be set in D.C., featuring founding fathers and Freemasons. So he's going to do for the Freemasons what he did for the Da Vinci Code.
This one will be even more controversial than all his other works then, huh?
I'm sure. And it's going to be drawing a lot of attention to our capital, which is desperately needed. And so I certainly applaud him for that. And I'm very glad that my book, Freedom's Gate, will be out by then. And didn't write it because of Dan Brown, but I'm glad that there's going to be this tremendous interest generated in what's going on in D.C.
Let's go to San Antonio, Texas, east of the Rockies. Jason, you're up.
Thank you, sir. I had a question for your guest.
Yeah.
I am very interested in things like unexplained disappearances of people. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a real quick story to illustrate. There is a story of a farmer who was walking across one of his fields, his home, and his entire family was sitting on the porch waiting for him to come home, and they were going to go in and have dinner. And he literally disappeared in the middle of the field in front of all of them.
Like he walked right into a portal or something.
Right.
That's what I was going to say. Do you think that disappearances such as this might have something to do with the Stargate? Because in this case, they had geologists and all kinds of other experts come out, test the ground, test the area. They had big searches. They never found anything.
No sinkholes, nothing.
Nothing. But they did claim that they could hear him yelling for help.
Oh, my God.
For a week afterwards.
Oh, my. That's got to be a portal, William, or another dimension.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, I love stories like that. That's incredible.
Almost like he wandered into the Twilight Zone.
You got it.
That is scary. William, get your website out again and tell us about the Dreamland Festival.
My website is williamhenry.net. The Dreamland Festival, you can go to unknowncountry.com. That's Whitley Strieber's site, unknowncountry.com, and click on Second Annual Dreamland Festival. It's here in Nashville, June 26th through 28th. Jim Mars, Linda Moulton Howe, Whitley Strieber, William Henry. We've still got seats available. Love to have you.
Nice and controlled with tickets available.
Yes.
Super. Good luck, William.
Thank you, George. Wonderful to talk with you. Let's go to Egypt.
Let's work on that. We'll work on that indeed. William Henry, he was behind door number two. Who will be behind door number three? That's next.